The date is May 9th, 1997, and we're watching The Fifth Element. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the fire to my water.
Nice. Hello, everybody. It's Colin Stewart.
I went elements. Yeah. But I didn't want to, you know, inflate your ego by making you the fifth element, the perfect being. You know, but fire is pretty cool, right?
Fire will do.
So this week, we bring in a first-time guest, someone we met through the grapevine over at Farm to Fable and started trading messages with. And so we're happy to welcome to the show Michael Ross's favorite person on the internet, Neil Powell.
Hey, that I accept that. I've been on every season of Farm to Fable I planned. It's the only reason I've watched Smallville at all, by the way. I remember several episodes as being younger when it was first coming out, but I never got past season four. I know once I started watching those, I know without a shadow of a doubt, this guy fell completely off of that bandwagon. And I refuse to watch anything up until the episode he has me on.
Yeah.
And it gives me an excuse to watch Smallville. Once a new season comes out, I'm like, oh no, Farm to Fable's coming. I better start watching. So I'm happy to be here to blow through this conversation or to ground this conversation. We can decide which
one of those two.
Yeah. One of those two.
You have a calming presence. So maybe you're the ground.
I will try.
That's funny because I also fell off of the Smallville train at like before season eight. But I recently messaged Michael. This is a plea to Michael because he still hasn't responded to my email if he listens to this podcast. But I desperately want to do season 8, episode 12. So, Michael, if you're listening, please hit me up.
Yeah, well, we've got him on the show in a couple of weeks. So
there we go.
All right, there you go. I'll make a further press then.
So now we have some business to get out of the way here, Neil, but one quick question, because we're in a sci-fi month right now, and we discovered with last week's entry in our sci-fi month that Power Rangers is where Colin's leanings are. What is your go-to sci-fi? I know it's loaded, right?
Wow, Power Rangers is an interesting answer. I think mine will always lean a little bit heavy towards Star Trek because I think it's like the sci-fi we wish we would go towards. I recently was watching Tested, which is Adam Savage from Mythbusters. He transitioned into his own YouTube channel, and someone recently asked in a Q&A, what is the sci-fi you think we'll go towards? He said, I hope we go towards Star Trek, where like basic human need is met and now we venture out into space. He says, but then again, I've also watched Black Mirror, so I know where we're headed. So yeah, I always lean towards, I'll watch all of it certainly, but like the comfort of Star Trek will always be there because when I was growing up, I started my day with LeVar Burton and I ended my day with LeVar Burton.
Oh yeah.
Because I would watch Reading Rainbow in the morning by myself and I would watch Star Trek The Next Generation with my dad.
The one episode where the two paths met.
Yeah. So
and he took us on behind the scenes of Star Trek.
I have a question, not to lead us into like a massive tangent, but since we're on the discussion of sci-fi, are you both like really like sci-fi, like big sci-fi people like Star Trek? Would you go into the like the Battlestar, the like Andromeda or Stargate realms? Like,
I didn't. I watched a few of the series of Star Trek. I love like Star Wars and all that kind of stuff, but I've never been a Doctor Who or a Battlestar Galactica or a Stargate guy. So that's something that's kind of a blind spot for me in sci-fi. So that's my answer at least.
So what's funny is I think so the adjacent ones that I have also dipped into really heavy are Farscape and Babylon 5. So those are like, so yeah, I never really got into too much Stargate. Or Andromeda, is that the one with Kevin Sorbo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched
Firefly.
That one.
Right.
Yeah.
I only asked because I've recently been having kind of a like existential crisis when it comes to do I or do I not like science fiction?
Mm.
Because I feel like the entire like Hollywood industry in the world is gaslighting me about Dune 2. I think it's like unequivocally one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
I haven't
but
seen it
like
yet.
okay, but people, have you seen it, Neil?
No, I haven't
Oh,
either.
dang. Dang.
Because I think I'm right there with you of just like, and I oh, now that's not fair. I don't want to go on your existential crisis with you. Because my first thought was, I think the genuine reason why I haven't watched it is because it's being so forcibly told to me how great it is, and I'm like,
Yeah.
but from such external places, not like a friend being like, I watched Dune 2 and it was amazing, I think you should watch it. It is just like everything about it is just like, hey, all my really cool Hollywood friends got together and we all think that you should watch this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll wear silver outfits to the premiere.
I watched the first one and I thought it was like super boring, but I was like, well, I can understand they're like laying the groundwork and that kind of stuff, you know, it's like a big, you know, tent pole type situation. They're laying the work.
Yeah.
And then with the pr I went to Dune 2 with the promise that there was going to be more action, and there wasn't really. And I'm just like, I'm not at all like a Timothée Chalamet fan by any means.
Yeah.
I'm not even really an Austin Butler fan, although I can kind of get on board with him. But I just like, I watched this movie and I was like prepared to, it was like one of those situations where I'm walking out of the theater and I'm prepared to like look over at my buddies and be like, man, what a piece of shit, right? And they're like, what are you talking about?
Oh, they were
And it's like,
drooling.
but the thing that always bothers me is anytime I ask somebody like, what do you like about it? I don't know. It's like, you know how back in the day with like the moral panic about like rock music when they thought like if you played a record backwards, you could hear the
Oh,
devil and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's like, I think there's some sort of subliminal messaging in this movie that's like not getting it. I'm like ear blind or something, because everybody just says, well, the visual, the cinematography, it was so amazing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sure, but was it entertaining? Oh, I get it. Was the story good?
Okay, this is
It's
okay. Now imagine
just.
you took everything you just did about their argument, their positive argument, and just applied that to every Michael Bay movie. It's the same argument.
Yeah,
Because it's like, well, did you like Transformers? Well, it was really visually stunning. I'm like, yeah, but one of the key elements in the second movie was talking about a robot's potential testicles. So I'm not sure where we lost the thread of the story, but we did. And it's
Yeah.
just like, well, but it was really visually. I'm like, no, that's not, it needs more.
Anyways, it's too bad. It's too bad you guys haven't seen it, because I was like, I've been curious to like. I guess the moral of the story is leading into our sci-fi month, and I think Power Rangers is like science
Yeah.
fiction adjacent, but this is like a true, this movie is like a true sci-fi movie, and it's just come at this time where I'm like, I don't even know if I like sci-fi anymore. I don't know what sci-fi
Well, on that note, we're looking back at May 1997 when the movies and theaters were Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion,
Ooh.
Murder at 1600, Volcano, subject of episode 25, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, and of course, our movie for today, The Fifth Element, which earned $263.9 million. Now, this is where it gets weird. On a 75 210,000 franc budget, but the
What's the
franc,
conversion rate on
well, see,
that?
the franc is obsolete now, so it's
90 is
approximately $12.3 million. However, I found conflicting trivia that says there was an $80 million budget on this, so maybe back when the franc was actually worth something, it really was $80 million, and the conversion I found was the 2024, where it's like, you know, it's not really worth wiping your ass with it, you know.
So
I
it was the biggest budget outside of Hollywood at the time. That took the record for
yeah.
it, which I don't. I still the other stuff I found, because I was like, well, let's look up some fun trivia. It also seemed kind of like he might have been just grifting people to this, in the sense of like not showing them what he was doing, but being like, no, I promise you, this will be fine. And obviously, it did not hurt anyone that gave money, because it far surpassed the original budget, but it did seem very much like, no, trust me, it'll be great.
It'll be huge.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Oh wait. Oh right. That was I was we've never gone rambling between this. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like Ruby Rhodes' weird Afro tube styling haircut, sure.
Sure.
Then please hit pause. Go watch the movie and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Didn't plan that one in advance at all. Some of them you're proud of, but well, okay, so this week I found six taglines for the posters of these movies. This movie. First one, 250 years in the future, all will be lost unless the fifth element is found. So that's kind of weak as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It like doesn't illustrate the plot in any meaningful way. It's the only element that we have to start out and through the whole movie.
Yeah. So number two, is it love or live? Unless that's is it love or live, but I'm pretty sure it should be live. I'll warn you, spoiler alert, they're not very good. Number three, time is not important, only life is important.
Okay, ripped a quote from the movie.
Yeah. Number four, the fifth is life.
Spoilers.
Number five, there is no future without it.
Huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't really, that one bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, weird.
Now, number six is the only one that I actually kind of like. Unfortunately, it's visual. You have to be able to see it for it to be really cool. But number six is it must be found. And the S in must is a number five.
Okay.
It's still stupid.
Oh my.
So yeah, none of these really ramping up to, it's not promising for a good movie, but let's hear more about it with a 60-second synopsis.
All right. In the 23rd century, an entity known as the Great Evil appears in space on a course to destroy the Earth. The only thing that can stop it is an ancient weapon comprised of five elements. Four are pretty standard, and one is a mystery. The weapon is in the care of an alien race called the
Bless
Mondoshans.
you.
Mandosh? I don't know if. See, it's hard because I don't know if my autocorrect like kind of did something, or if I just typed it in wrong, or if I typed it in right. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And on their way back to Earth, their ship is ambushed and destroyed by a crew of mercenaries hired by a bad guy named Zorg, not Zurg of Buzz Lightyear.
Or Zork of classic computer fame.
Right. Scientists use a fancy 3D printer to produce a full creature from a severed hand, and that creature ends up being super hot girl named Lilu, who also happens to be the fifth element. She jumps out a window and ends up on the in the company of New York City cab driver Corbin Dallas, who also happens to have been a special forces officer in a previous life. Corbin becomes ensnared in this whole debacle, and he and Lilu end up going on a mission to find the other four elements, which they do inside the belly of a dying alien. They get back to Earth, where Corbin processes his love, or processes, where Corbin professes his love in order to instill Lilu with enough faith in humanity to fulfill her role in the weapon and destroy the great evil. Sorry, my autocorrect really failed me on a couple of these points. I'm trying to adjust as I read.
Perfect. I
Right
think we're
on.
done. All right,
Yeah.
wrap it. Oh my
Oh
gosh.
boy. The fifth element. I mean, when this movie came out, I thought it was cool as shit. I mean, this
Yeah.
is. I've said it several times on this show before, but Bruce Willis with hair is the best Bruce Willis. And this is, for me, one of those examples where it's just like any movie where he's got hair, they're usually bangers.
Given the plot of the story, when rewatching it, I am surprised, or just full-fledged baffled at the level of performance that Bruce Willis chose to give to this film. In the sense that, like, there are certain production things where they basically just forced him to act because they didn't tell him anything, apparently. Like when she drops into the cab and starts using the actual language that her and the director figured out together, they kind of just didn't tell Bruce that or tell him what
Sorry.
she was saying.
Yeah.
So his like confusion is just genuine because he doesn't know at all what she is trying to convey
it
to
was the
him.
same thing with the diva where he hadn't seen her in full makeup or heard the song, and so his reactions there are genuine as well. But yeah, I know with me, this is a movie I loved right from the beginning. It was one of those movies that made me fall in love with Gary Oldman. I had already seen The Professional at this point because I went through my cinephile phase when I was in, you know, late junior high, early high school. And so, you know, this was an extension. This was another Luc Besson film. This was... I know I loved it when it first came out, so that's kind of my history with Fifth Element. So, Neil, what about you? I threw you a few ideas of sci-fi movies to do with us, and you really latched on to Fifth Element, so...
Yeah, because I would have been 97, I would have been, 11, 12, something in there?
Yeah.
So, like, I probably would have seen it either in theaters or shortly thereafter. So I think it just hit me at, like, the right sensibilities, because, like, the first... I remain confused as to how Mila Jovovich is the thing that came out of that 3D printer.
Yeah.
But that's, we could talk about, because I'm like, those aliens had like a weird little neck and a misformed head.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how we got to from A to B. But anytime they walk in with their armor, gave me like super heavy like Warhammer vibes, which I was like just starting to get into. And I think it was the practical effects, because those hold up really well. The things that are pure CG, ooh, are they a product of their time? But there is a lot of stuff that held up really well, because apparently a ton of this was really practical. Like most of the city was...
A lot of miniatures.
Yeah. Maxtures, because they were like 20 feet tall, because you're also representing... And it's also the rewatch where it's like as an adult, you're figuring more things out. So it's the 2300 century. And I feel like he says there are 200 billion people he's trying to save. And all I can think is... gross. That sounds terrible.
So now, Colin, what about you? Do you have a history with the Fifth Element?
Yeah, it's funny because I have not watched this movie in years.
Okay.
But it's one of those movies where I would, if anybody asked me, I'd be like, yeah, the Fifth Element, that movie's so awesome. I loved it. I really loved it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then watching it, I was just struck by the fact that, like, I probably watched this movie for the first time when I was like 12, 13. And literally the only thing I remember about it is the boobs. And I was like, that explains. that's like all you need to know about the time when I watched this movie for the first time. Because I was like, I remembered what everybody looked like. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I remember Chris Tucker, what he looked like. I remember Gary Oldman. I remember what they all look like, but I could not have told you any of their names. Vaguely, I knew that like she, like Lilu. I remember like the end scene. Like I knew she's like part of this weapon thing, but like the whole history and the overall story and everything that happened, like I could not have told you what it was about. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a weird situation because I was like watching this movie, knowing I had seen it a few times before when I was younger, but might as well have been watching it for the first time, being like, I do not remember.
Did I dream this movie goes. At some point? Like, yeah. Gave vague flashbacks.
I think I've talked about this before, but I also remember that this is a movie that I watched when it would have been on like TNT or like TBS Superstation. Oh, wow. Like one
yeah,
of those.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So it's also like a movie that I don't know that I've ever watched from beginning to end. I might have just like turned it on, like, because really as it progressed, like I definitely remember the back half more than I remember the front half. So
okay, right on. Well, let's jump into The Fifth Element, directed by Luc Besson, director of Leon the Professional, Lucy, The Messenger, Joan of Arc, you know, French shit, produced by Patrice Ledoux, and written by Luc Besson and Robert Mark Kamen. This is a movie 22 years in the making. He conceived it first when he was 16 years old, and he was 38 when it was finally released. Like, can you imagine being a prodigy at something and writing a script like this when you're 16? I wish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes a lot of other things more clear, and like knowing that and then rewatching it, even when like it's that walking through the crowd down towards where the opera is going to happen and being like, oh, that's so-and-so. And this is this person. He's the laser ball champ. And these people over here are these and this. And I'm like, yeah, after 22 years, you probably know all of that because you just keep writing, working on the same world and script for that long.
Elbows
you just
with people. Yeah.
Yeah, have answers.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish I could have dropped something like this when I was a kid. It would be worse finding out on my deathbed that, like, I was a prodigy at something, but no one ever put the right thing in my hands. Like, I'm the world's greatest bassoon player, but no one has ever handed me a fucking bassoon. You know, like, it's... That's even worse. And I guess this movie was originally supposed to be a trilogy, but he turned it into one script instead. I don't know. Would it have been a lot more Dune-like if he had stretched it out into three movies then? A lot less action going on?
That, I don't know. Reading the reviews, I know like this movie is well-loved, but I found the pacing of it and kind of like the story to be... It's like things just happened a lot of the time. Yeah. With, like, no explanation. Like, even, like, Lilu's, like, whole situation, like, the backstory with, like, the weapon and stuff, like, I could have used a little bit more explanation of what was happening there. I could have used a little bit more, like, Lilu and Corbin, like, getting to know each other, because their relationship seems to progress, like, Disney super
princess
quickly.
Princess love, man, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you think about it from, like a three-movie arc, that final moment, you could have led to that final moment being more, where it's like, well, I mean, first off, he better say it or you're all dead. Yeah. So I understand the motivation behind it, but I agree. It's like, because at that point, I mean, well, then I also think of like D&D math of like, oh, yeah, we've been adventuring for a week and we went from level 1 to 20. So I'm like, okay, sure, I guess. I don't know how that works at all, but same concept of like, you slammed into the back of my cab and now we love each other and save the world. Great job, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's just weird that it's, like, she falls on his cab, he, like, returns her to the whatever, and then he gets a call from, like, the government being like, well, actually, like, we need you, and then it's just, they're on the mission, and then, like, in pretty, like, quick succession, you're, like, at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the clear way, I guess, to make the movie, to spread it across three is to not have the great evil coming at such a high clip. And then having to actually go more places, like having the four other elements like elsewhere, like apart from each other, that they'd have to like track each one down type thing.
Yes.
Yeah, or do more, because you did feel like not full Lord of the Rings, but you did feel like you got multiple endings, because it's like popping champagne, everything's great. You could have that be the end of the second movie, and then that first clip be like, oh hey, basically the thing that was way out in space, it's on its way. And so now how do we deal with that? Because you could have that whole temple scene be like the crux of the third film and then figuring all that out instead of just like dirt, sweat, fire. We did it.
But the fire.
I think it's also strange that it's like one. It's like a rare movie where the villain like never really gets to have his moment. He never gets to have his moment of almost success.
He never meets the protagonist of the movie either.
And that, it's very
strange.
The
only scene they're in together is where he ducks down the hallway and then Zorg comes by him with his gun. Like that's the only time they're even remotely close to on screen together at the same time.
We pull up like what's felt like a whole bunch of money too, and potentially a lot of people. With that there like space cruise ship. Nobody seemed to, I mean, I guess the whole world's at stake here, but like that went real unnoticed of just this opulent cruise ship that was just like, we kind of blew that thing up. Hope it worked out for, hopefully the vibe, and it had some real Titanic vibes. So I assume there was one guy still on playing the violin.
That's right, gentlemen. It's been an honor. But I mean, of course, this sci-fi movie, though, we actually open it up in Egypt in 1914. With the Aziz Light scene, where he's discovering the hieroglyphics in the pyramid there, and we got Luke Perry, who is like billed sixth in this movie, but has less than 100 words.
that was weird.
It was so weird because it just never came back. Like even. Having watched the movie multiple times in this new rewatch, I was just like, well, I wonder when he comes. He just never comes back. And for any reason, I was just like, how or why did you do this? I mean, I guess cool. Luke Perry, yay. I mean, especially at the time of like teen heartthrob. Luke Perry. Also, just don't show him ever again for any reason, because we're 300 years into the future. So he's dead.
His drawing never comes up again. His, you know. And the other thing that always bugged me about this scene is when the aliens come, the duck things, whatever they are, the armored ducks, and they the one can't get out in time but sticks its hand in. When they come back in the future, how come there's not like a duck corpse hanging out behind that door as soon as they open it?
No, they like video games. They just kind of meld into the floor when they die. Oh, okay. That's why you had to hurry and take the key. No, I agree. Or my other thing was like, well, then how did the door ever close all the way? Yeah. What do you do? How does the key work? Your hand's right where it goes.
That's right. That too. Like, or it's not a very thick slab of stone.
My rework is that I want Luke Perry to be like the long descendant of Gary Oldman's character. Because like he saw everything. He knew everything. Like, as far as I know, you didn't just kill him right then. So then you have basically two factions perpetually vying for this item because you know what they are. You have the priest who, why did you, first off, the priest storyline of like, why you let him in there in the first place when you were like, oh no, never mind. He did figure it out. I got to kill him.
Yeah.
A little weird to me, but you could have two competing factions because they both know the same thing now.
That would be a neat little addition to it. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, Luke Perry gone. Dead.
Yeah. That was shocking to me based purely, like you were saying, on the fact that they take the time to bill him. Mm-hmm. And like, it's not just like, oh, well,
featuring,
wait for the credit credits later, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. It's not even one of those, holy shit, was that Luke Perry? You know, and you don't find out till the end. Speaking of Luke Perry, I mean, let's run down this cast while we're already talking cast. So
yes, we already talked about Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
Bruce Willis is Corbin Dallas.
I guess Jean Reno was the original choice for the part, as in like the professional Jean Reno.
Oh wow!
And Mel Gibson was a possibility as well.
Knowing that it's like a French produced film, it's kind of like surprising to me that Bruce Willis is like, I wonder how that conversation happened or how that got hooked up.
Mm-hmm. 2 hours after he got the script, he said yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Apparently it was like the fastest response of all time. I don't know what it was about the script, but he read it. Apparently it was like, absolutely, I need to be in this movie. Yeah. Which I'm like, I don't think that. Okay, sure. I accept this information. Yeah.
Gary Oldman plays Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg.
That's a lot of names. You don't even realize that when you're watching the movie. I guess he played the character as a cross between Ross Perot and Bugs Bunny. That's what Gary Oldman is quoted as saying.
Hmm. Ian Holm is Vito Cornelius. Mila Jovovich is Lilu.
Yeah, and
this is her first role, right?
Well, it's definitely early, but I don't think it is. Like, wasn't she in something like Reality Bites or something? Wasn't she in one of those? But I guess Elizabeth Berkeley auditioned for the role, but because of the failure of Showgirls, studios were reluctant to hire her. And I guess Julia Roberts was a possibility as well. See, I think this is the one that definitely cemented Mila Jovovich's reputation as, like, your go-to sci-fi girl.
Yeah. Oh, she was in Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Mm. Yeah, I think you get to see her naked in that one too, Colin.
Yeah, but she's 15.
Oh,
that's so
dazed
weird.
And confused as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Even like, I don't know. I want to talk about it now, but like, after I finished watching this movie, I looked up the age difference between Bruce Willis and Mila Jovovich because she's 19 in this movie.
Oh my!
And he was like 41. He would have been. He's Or maybe 42. He's 21 years older than her. And I was like, that's crazy. Well, not crazy, but
Hollywood magic.
Yeah, like, I just feel like that's one of those things that, like, wouldn't really sit well in today's climate.
You mean like Bill Belichick and his 24-year-old girlfriend?
Oh, but, yeah. Sure.
Or like it would feel, DiCaprio and his 19-year-old girlfriend?
It would seem exploitative.
Yeah, kind of is.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying people are going to have stopped doing it, but it's just more frowned upon these days.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Chris Tucker is Ruby Rhode. Luke Perry is Billy Masterson. Brian James is General Monroe. Tommy Tiny Lister Jr. is President Lindbergh.
Yeah. I think we've had him in a couple of our movies. I feel like we have, or it's
I think we have, but I only remember him from he's in The Dark Knight. He's one of the prisoners when the Joker has the little like prisoners blow up your ship, or the cops blow up the civilians blow up their ship or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
He's in Little Nicky too, or something like that. Like that's one that I remember him from. And both he and Chris Tucker are in Friday together as well.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Like I remember when I first saw this movie, I hated Ruby Rod. Couldn't stand Ruby Rod. Like, but then after this movie, Rush Hour came out, and I'm like, oh, okay. I kind of dig Chris Tucker. Let me give this guy another try.
Yeah, the funniest thing I saw was, you know, and all of it is the internet, so who's to say how true anything is, but the idea that he was not the first choice, Prince was the first choice, and then Prince supposedly saw the wardrobe and he's like, sorry, that's too effeminate and I will not wear it and I do not want to take this role. Huh. I was like,
well, that's what the character is based on, though, is Prince and Michael Jackson is what the character is based on.
But I also think, like, the level to which Chris Tucker committed to this role is staggering.
It is. And I appreciate that much more now than I did back then. Because when this first came out, I couldn't stand him. It's like, the movie was great, except for that guy. I do want to shout out John Neville as General Stater. Have you ever seen The Adventures of Baron Munchausen?
No.
Nope.
No? Oh, okay. Yeah, he's Baron Munchausen. And I guess the diva was a last-minute replacement because the original actress failed to show up. So the diva is actually Luc Besson's fiance at the time.
Oh. Yeah. Nice to have that in your pocket.
Yeah. A statuesque woman that...
Well, I assume it was somebody else singing. No, it was. It was someone else singing.
Someone else singing.
And I guess, she was doing 30, like, a bunch of lip-sync practice just to get it close enough to, like, obviously appear as if she is the one doing the scene.
So, but I think we got cast list. Whatever. There we go. Cast list done. So after our opening with Luke Perry, where we've got the aliens and, you know, the stones and the key and all that sort of stuff, we jump to 300 years later, actually like 350 years later, if we want to get technical. But the evil has returned, and so they discover that you can't shoot this thing away. It's basically like Apocalypse, isn't it? In Spider-Man, this giant Superman, I mean.
Galactus!
I was going to say it's Galactus. Yeah, Galactus.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, the more firepower you throw at it, yeah.
I do like after the first one where it was like you had a clear indicator of what would happen. They're like, we should do the first thing, but a lot more. Oh, now it's 200% the size it was. Oops.
Isn't that always the attitude, though? Wasn't that how it was solved in Independence Day, too?
Yeah.
We'll just try throwing more at it. Yeah.
Yeah. if you can't, what's it from? Like, there's always a bigger bomb type situation. Like, we just, like, everything can be defeated with a bomb. You just have to find one big enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work. Just have the crop dust flyer just fly his ship directly into the middle. It'll be fine.
Yeah. 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 And then some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Adam West, RIP. Okay, so after the opening where we can't destroy the evil, we cut to Corbin Dallas in South Brooklyn, New York. He's a former major. I love the cigarettes with the extra long filters. Like, as someone that used to smoke, that was a gag I really liked. But I don't understand how in the future they don't have Surgeon General warnings on the filters. I mean, they already have that now in 2024.
Yeah.
That's a new
thing. And I also like that mechanism is to, like, help him quit, too. It's like, oh, so you want to quit. And here are your 4 allotted cigarettes per day that are, like, 60% are filter.
Yeah. And everyone smokes them. Like, everyone has... Mm-hmm. All filter cigarettes. It's funny.
Well, I guess, but when did they start putting those warnings on?
Well, for us around here, 25 years ago at least.
Yeah, it had to be like in the I want to say it was like the year 2000, somewhere like around there. Fifth Element was made in a world where they still thought like there is no harm to smoking.
Well, the thing I find most fascinating about Fifth Element when it comes to the future stuff. And this one does it right. Unlike something like Demolition Man that only takes place like 30 years in the future where you're like, yeah, right, flying cars, fuck you. But, you know, with this one, it's like, okay, it's 300 years in the future.
I mean, I'll be honest. I thought the like 3D printing scene blew my mind. I was like, whoa, like it almost looks exactly like when they're doing the bones, like that looks almost exactly like what a 3D printer looks like now. It was crazy.
It wasn't unreasonable. It was like, yeah, slice by slice. So you just fill in the blanks. You're good to go. And yeah. Then sort of the like, just blast it with UV to force it to grow skin, which I thought was weird. But sure.
That part I was like,
yeah, is that science? Is that how that works? Is that?
Yeah, that part was a little suspect, but still.
It's future science. Future science is always kind of magic. I mean, you got a lot of it in this movie where, you know, you've got the thing that makes chicken. Like, I love the magic science that they have going on. The makeup thing, the nail thing, you know, all these magic things.
The chicken pellets. Ding, ding, ding.
The chicken pellets, yeah. The one thing that they've got missing, though, is no one has, like, a cell phone attached to them, right? Like, even looking at Bruce Willis's phone that he has is laughable, where it's like, if Luc Besson had even made this 5 years later, there would have been more video calling and more devices that people are holding and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even the one when he gets the call... Well, and you also wonder, like, okay, so is... It's that weird dystopian of like, okay, do you circle back on certain things? Because the fact that they have like a tube system for your mail is also wild. Because it's like an old bank teller where he's like, dunk, and he just gets his mail to show up like that. And then the guy that just shows up to his window and like cooks him food and then just like skirts off afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, I love that idea of being able to open my window and have a restaurant delivered to me. You know, we're already in the future where I can get almost any restaurant delivered to me, but to actually have the restaurant come to me, amazing. Like, food trucks on speed dial? Thank you.
It makes me think of the bar that has the walk-up window to the restaurant that's connected to it. Typically, it's a Taco Bell. So if you haven't seen that, definitely look that up, where it's like you're in the middle, like a super standard bar with like, you know, full service pool tables over here, dance floor over here, and you look over and boom, there's a Taco Bell and it's just a walk-up window and you can just order your food straight into the Taco Bell and then they will have it ready for you.
I have never seen that.
Future is here.
Yeah, but unlike Demolition Man, where Taco Bell is who won the franchise wars, not in this one. Oh no, in this one, I think who won the sponsor, franchise wars is Sponsorship Corner. Fuck. Shut up! I had it. It was like such a great segue. That was like a flawless expert segue that I had going.
And I set you up so well for it with the Taco Bell reference that you weren't expecting.
Oh, boy. Well, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, The Fifth Element, not very much, is brought to you by Marcotti Grappa Vinaccia. That's the wine that they celebrate with in the pyramid. Mm-hmm. Coco Chanel and McDonald's Restaurant, the winner of the franchise wars in Fifth Element World. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I cheated, though, with the Grappa Vinaccia, because they actually, on the label, cut off the part that says Marcotti. So it's like, but I did, like, kind of an image search of that. I'm like, that's a famous type of bottle of wine. I've seen that on posters on people's walls, is that bottle of wine. So I cheated with that one. But yeah, the Coco Chanel, the makeup box that she puts on her face has the double C's of Coco Chanel, so... But yeah, McDonald's couldn't be much more subtle than the giant billboard with McDonald's.
Yeah, there were other things in there because, you know, they always talk about like having served X billion, blah, 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 blah. One of the like carts that drives by says 65 trillion served.
Nice. I'm surprised that more people wouldn't have jumped on board or that they wouldn't have approached more people to try to, you know, help with this inflated budget, where it's just like, you know, hey, Ford, do you want to have your car logo on our taxi? Like, yeah. I'm surprised that no one went for it.
That is probably the weirder ones with how prevalent cars are through the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. The taxi remains unbranded. The police cars are unbranded. Like so many of the, yeah, so many vehicle options. And yet nothing had a logo slapped on it.
Yeah. And I guess the digital guys had a little bit of fun with it. And the license plates, you don't really get to see them, but they say the fuck you state for New York. I think that's pretty great.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Also, how do licenses work? This is the other thing that's like, there are certain... Oh, first off, I don't mean it to be this, but if I don't say it, it'll haunt me. There are certain elements of this film, done, we can all move on, that, like, I'm like, I would like to know, I guess I want to know more. It doesn't impact the film in any meaningful way, but, like, how does your driver's license work?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of points.
Yeah, like, what's this weird point system that you're operating on that you're clearly not working well in because you have none now and literally can't even park it to get it worked on?
Yeah. What do you do then when you're like 150 stories above the ground and you're not allowed to drive your car home because you have 0 points? Do you sit there and wait for a cop?
Just get arrested because you have 0 points. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, officer. I ran out of points.
Abandoned vehicle. Get one of those orange stickers slapped on the side window that are impossible to scrape off. Like,
it's just floating there. And it just slowly sinks into the fog like the Jetsons.
Oh boy. Well, I mean, another one that I want to know is, how does the space gate work? Like, that's one of the things that always bugs me in sci-fi, is that people don't think about 3D space. Like, how come in Star Trek they always come face on at the same, you know, level and everything like that? How come no one ever comes in at a 90 degree angle to another ship? You know, and so the space gate that they have around the Earth to let the ships through, It only goes once around the Earth.
Like, yeah, it's not a circle. Yeah.
I feel like there should at least be a y-axis as well. So that would make me feel like there's actually something that could make a force field around the Earth.
That's a good point.
Yeah, bare minimum, you would need the X and Y, at which point we could start to answer the question. But yeah, if you only have one, is it so perfect that it works? I'm sure. Yeah. Of course it does. It works great.
Yeah. You don't want to let me in the gate here? Okay. Like, I'll go 100 miles higher and go through at an angle, like, because that's not where the gate is.
And also, like, how long did that gate stay open that you let those two guys come through and murder?
Oh, I know. My ship? Yeah.
Yeah. It's these types of things where you can tell this movie was written by 16-year-olds, I think.
Look, we don't have time for all these explanations, but I did create a language, so
let's get to the cool shit.
Yeah, real language in this, like Klingon or Dathraki or Elvish. Or, yeah, I mean, yeah, 400 words long. Mia Jovovich actually learned it.
Yeah, where they literally, I guess, write letters to each other to like fully understand the language.
Nerds.
This is a lot. This is a lot, guys. So I'm trying to think of, okay, out of all the technology that was there, like, so it almost like has this dystopian vibe because none of it seems great. All of it seems fairly practical. Like the fact that his fridge and his shower basically exist in the same vertical space and then have to just move back and forth and his bed slides in and out. Is there a piece of technology that you saw that you actually enjoyed? Because like, yeah, the guy coming up to my window was kind of cool, but like, I'm not that far away from that technology now.
Yeah.
I mean, a person will drive food to my
house.
I like
magic chicken. I like chicken pellets. I think that is an amazing thing. I mean, Back to the Future 2, same thing. You know, gee, Ma, you really know how to rehydrate a pizza. Like, I love the idea of being able to take almost nothing, put it in a thing for like 3 seconds and pull it out, and you have like this full Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
I think that's some impressive stuff right there. Flying cars, of course. I mean, but I can't imagine a world with flying cars, though, because there's already enough shitty drivers out there that if everyone had the ability to fly a vehicle, no.
Yeah, I know. It's the same 3D issue. Like, look, I'm so deeply concerned on the horizontal that you won't stay in your lane. Now you're telling me I got to be concerned about the same thing on the vertical.
Yeah.
I'm out. Yeah. I'm just.
Yeah, that's the thing that I always find. Like, I don't understand how, like, it looks cool in movies, but when you have flying cars and it's like, is there some like unseen traffic grid, like where, like, or like, how do you lane change down? Mm-hmm. If you need to go down a lane or something like that, like, how do you let the people below you know that you need to enter?
I assume it's got to be that these cars are advanced enough that they have all these proximity sensors. I mean, think about what cars these days have on them, where they've got lights that light up on your mirrors to let you know someone's in your blind spot, or they've got, you know, beeps that will slow you down if you're getting too close to the car in front of you. Yeah, all this shit already kind of exists.
Yeah, the adaptive cruise. I've seen one recently where if you're like, let's say you're going to try and merge right, there's a camera in your rearview mirror on that side that will then show what's in your blind spot on your dash.
Yeah.
Like in your, so, but I think the same thing. I'm like, well, at that point, like, is it technically just public transit? Because like my car just does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like how much does the cab driver actually need to do? I don't know.
Somebody's going to honk that horn.
yeah. In some facets, it looks like very difficult, but on the other hand, like so much of it just looks automatic.
I'm just looking at a Kerrang article that's talking about how Fifth Element predicted the future.
Yeah.
We even have like the multipass. Like that's basically like any smartwatch or like cell phone these days.
Yeah. The only difference is no one has like something to their face the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, also with inventions, I will say that the guns are kind of cool, but like, you know, not that I'm a gun guy, but like the Zorg's gun is like, it does everything. That's the Inspector Gadget of guns right there.
Yeah. The repeater where he like goes back, every other shot goes back to where the first one was and all those sorts of things. Yeah.
But my God, Gary Oldman is so cool. I love Gary Oldman. Like Gary Oldman, he plays a fun bad guy, and then all of a sudden, just in his life, he switched and he started playing good guys. You know, all of a sudden, he's Harry Potter's godfather, and he's Commissioner Gordon, and all these this stuff. But as a bad guy, I love him in this and The Professional. Oh,
yeah, he's good. He's really really good. Really weird.
Absolutely.
And has quite the unceremonious end to his character in this film.
Yeah. When his face starts dripping, is that pure evil? I mean, it looks like chocolate syrup, but is that what that's supposed to be? Is pure evil dripping down his face in the one scene? Like, it's way off, you know, later in the movie, but when he's communicating with the evil on the phone,
Yeah, I didn't understand what that was, because I'm not sure that I fully understood what the great evil was.
Yeah.
Or, like, how he interacts.
Yeah, it's like a fully sentient entity that like is just hanging out and then steals enough satellites to figure out how satellites work to then call Gary Oldman specifically his character and talk to him. At which point, is it that it is coming out of him? I could never figure it out either. Like, is this, the embodiment of pure evil is exuding from your face now?
Yeah. Or do you have a leak?
wholly unrelated.
Let's talk about our crash-landed survivor. Let's talk about our Fifth Element. She's a survivor. All she is a severed hand, but there's a few living cells left. It's enough to rebuild a body, and yet we get to 3D print a human body. Like, the CGI is janky, boy, it's still kind of a cool visual, though. Like, just like Colin said, they kind of got it right. Like, I've watched a 3D printer print something before. It's kind of how it looks.
Yeah. Slice by slice. Yeah, and the whole, like, we have 40 of something, but this has, like, 200 or...
200,000. Like, the DNA markers, yeah. Oh,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of DNA. I always wondered, is
all the DNA.
My thought was also, like, is a human the only thing that this can print, and is that why it printed a human?
Maybe.
Or could this print anything? Because that was my whole thing. It was like, you said the weird duck people. I'm like, again, their necks were like super small and their heads were even smaller. Yeah. Like, this is not what I thought would be inside that their suit of armor.
I think actually you saying that has kind of solved that for me all these years later, is that, yeah, the machine doesn't understand what this creature is, so it prints the approximation, which is they only know how to do humans.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you could explain that more from like, but production wise, you wouldn't, it helps with production to just make them a human, obviously.
Yeah.
But the other thing I thought of is like, if you like that in between ground, is their hand weird the whole time? Or like, is that glove stuck on there? Or, but again, that's a production thing that would obviously perpetually cost more money as soon as you make that choice.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the thing with the hand. Like, I get like they find this piece in like a bunch of debris. Like, when they first show how the weapon works, I think at the beginning of the movie, there's like that statue that just has like the open mouth, like gape or whatever. Yeah. And like, and so then I was like, well, am I to believe that like that statue is basically just this like carbonite, like human sculpture that just sits in the middle of the thing? Like, was she before not really even like an actual like living person, but just like, I don't know, this like encased human being form inside this like statue? And then because like it was broken, like it takes the DNA and like replicates the human without the concrete or the rock, for lack of a better word, I guess. So that's what I was trying to figure out, if that's what was happening, because I didn't.
Okay, so yeah,
I didn't get the rock hand.
See, I forgot about the statue, but yeah, she should have been in the statue. She wouldn't have had the glove on. I don't know. Oh,
because yeah, how did you find a random hand that also happened to be the person that is the fifth element?
Yeah,
is that to imply that one of those aliens is always the fifth element?
Yeah, or are they all the fifth element?
As long as they felt love.
Why wasn't the alien girl with the stones in her guts, if the Mondawashans or whatever their name are, were like coming to save the day, why wasn't she with them? Or maybe this is like a vice president situation where they can't all be together at the same time.
We can't be on the same flight at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Okay, maybe there's a lot more holes than
that. Also, how is your anatomy functioning if you have four big-ass stones in your stomach area?
Yeah.
Well, and your chest cavity is just chock full of rocks.
That too. Yeah, you'd think that would at least affect the acoustics of how you produce your sound. You know, that's right on the diaphragm. That's where...
Yeah.
You need to project from.
She has a very gravelly voice.
her stomach acts as a bag of holding. That's a D&D.
Yeah, it's fine.
Joke.
Back to the 3D printing of Leela, we get our convenient thermal bandages. And because they spent all the money on the 3D printer, all they had for walls in this joint was tinfoil. I've never understood the wall of this lab. It is so paper thin.
Why? Yeah, just right through it.
Right through. Like, is that an exterior wall that she just punched through that's like looks like tinfoil?
No, because she climbs around. To get out, she still climbs through the vents.
Oh, that's right. Because we do have our fugitive scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it makes me feel. I did not kill my wife. That's what I think of when I see her through the tunnels and then she gets to the end. Yeah, I expect Tommy Lee Jones to be pulling the gun on her. Yeah.
Instead, we're like, "Do you understand?" And she just walks away. I don't think she does.
She doesn't understand. I will say the visuals of the 23rd century New York is pretty impressive. It's visually stunning. See, we keep going back to that when it comes to sci-fi, but I think it is visually stunning. This is CGI that actually kind of holds up. The cityscape isn't too bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but again, a lot of that is the practical effects layered with something.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you have that as a base, whereas like with the 3D printing, which is definitely one of the ones that's most notably not aging well.
Oh, yeah.
You have nothing. Like, you just 100% are using CGI to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works. Conceptually, it works really well. But yeah, the stuff inside the city, I think, is a lot of fun. Yeah, and again, you're left with a lot of questions, but that comes from a world that has existed in someone's mind at that point for 2 decades and is fully fleshed out of like, okay, the real Jetsons vibe of, yeah, we just kept building up and up and up and up, and once we hit 200 billion people, well, then we just have a whole area that's just covered in fog that we just don't talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw like this, when she like gets out of the window or whatever before she like makes the jump, I was kind of like, when I first saw it, I was like, ooh, like that didn't age well. But then I was kind of like, it is still impressive for 1990s. I guess like I'm so used to watching like modern day movies or like, you know, movies made in the 2010s and stuff, where like in a post Avatar world, I guess I'll call it. You're just like used to a certain realistic quality. And I sometimes wish that I could go back in time and like watch this movie in the theater for the first time, because I bet I would have been like, whoa, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I see that even with the other films, even more modern films, where there's something about the theater where like things blur just a little bit, and like people always want to have this like over sensitized to, oh, I need to be have 4K, 7, 8K, 16K, 32K. I need all of them.
All
And
the
it's like, yeah,
keys.
but you're like, yeah, but once you get to a certain level of them, it's like, well, I can clearly see that's a person and that's clearly a giant robot. And like, there's no blur between those, like I would get in the theater. Like, because the theater, it can, it, like, the way the screens are set up, like, it, and it's a projector, it can only be so clear, and it helps your mind kind of blur those edges. Where, again, going back to the whole Michael Bay of it, it's like, yeah, it looks amazing, but that's definitely a big computer robot, and this is just a person, and they're in the same scene together, and like, I can't suspend my reality the same way. That's why I feel like going to the theater, like you said, going to the theater for the first time, using that theater technology that was there then, like it helps just immerse you in that world because everything's just blurring a little bit more together just through the act of watching it in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, the CGI in this movie is definitely no third act Power Rangers movie, but
Yeah.
they made no effort to blur anything, and it looked like it was just the prototype. But yeah,
They're
no, a
just like,
good
yeah,
point.
so you worked on that scene, right? Oh no, I thought you were working on that
Yeah,
scene.
like,
Oh
oh shit, it's going to the
All right, delivered. And
theater.
it's too bad. It's real, really too bad that none of us worked on that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, we're gonna be watching like The Matrix either next week or in a couple weeks anyways. And it's like, I have watched that one more recently. And even that one, like I remember, that's when I specifically remember before watching Avatar, I would have said like The Matrix was kind of like where I was like
Cutting edge.
had my
Yeah.
mind blown by CGI. And now when you go watch it, you're like, I could do that on my phone. Like I
Yeah. Well, but I still think that those two are the most notable ramps in advancing that technology. The Matrix and then Avatar. And yeah, it'll be really interesting to find out what's next. I mean, I think the biggest next is already implemented, where they don't green screen things in anymore. They have that giant wall that's basically putting, like,
Yeah, the
actively
volume.
putting the background behind them. So if the actors are moving, the background that they see can move with them or shift with the camera and do things
And
like
they're getting
that. But
natural lighting on them as well, so you know that helps with reflections and stuff like that. Yeah.
it's funny because I feel like as CGI has progressed, like personally, I'm at a point where I want more practical. Like I want somebody to take it back
Me
old school and
too.
do more
Yeah,
practical
start
shit. Like
blowing some shit up again.
I just watched Furiosa, and I really liked it. But like my one like critique of it compared to Fury Road was that they use so much CGI and so little practical stuff, where I thought that was like the coolest part of Fury Road.
Yep. Well, I mean, this is a prime example. Like, all the practical effects that are here stand up so much better. Like, the aliens, for the most part, when they aren't CG, like, they're just there. Like, they just exist. They look super weird, certainly, but like, they're just there because they're physically existing in the same space. That weird transition from human to alien is pretty rough to watch. But when they're just hanging out.
Even like in his apartment and in Zorg's office, like when Zorg is choking and like everything in his desk is going haywire, I mean, they're sitting there actually shooting cards and stuff out of his office. That creature is a puppet on set. It's not a thing, you know. And in his apartment, it's you've got the fridge and the shower that goes up and down and the the self-cleaning, resealing bedspread that he has, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's all this stuff where it's like, yeah, that's actually a physical set, which is a cool thing to see.
Yeah. Yeah. The creature on his desk is definitely my favorite uncredited character. Because goddamn, that thing was ready to watch him die. just laughed him, just looked him dead in the eyes and laughed right in his face when it thought he was going to die.
I think the thing I like about Practical is that you can sometimes see they get better performances from the actors involved. But there's sometimes as much as I love the MCU movies, there are sometimes where you're just like, that person is just talking to nothing. You know, they're just like talking to the air.
Shouting at a tennis ball.
Or shouting at a tennis ball.
For something like Mandalorian, the fact that they made Grogu mostly practical, like it's usually a puppet, it's like that was the smartest move they could have done, because it's such an important character in that series that, you know, he has something to interact with all the time. And it is noticeable with something like that, yeah.
Or even like to the degree to which you could have actors not even be there. And their whole thing happens without the other actors. The one I think about most recently was the D&D movie where Michelle Rodriguez didn't know the person she was acting to was Bradley Cooper. Because it happened completely somewhere else without her. And I'm like, I feel like that probably would have changed things had you both been acting to each other in the room.
Yeah.
Together at the same time.
Stuff like that makes me so sad. Because I remember listening to like Sean Gunn. Like Bradley Cooper is basically like never on set. Like he's never there for any of the Guardians, like for Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
Because Sean Gunn does all the mocap stuff.
Yeah.
I would feel weird in two ways. I'd feel bad for this guy who's there day in, day out doing all the mocap stuff. You know, probably like delivering the lines while they're there, because all the lines are gonna be done later. But then, like, kind of is getting no real credit. Mm-hmm. But then I would also like, to your point about Michelle Rodriguez, it'd be weird because you see it more and more now where people are like, oh, yeah, so what was it like working with this person? You're like, we weren't even in the same room together ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could literally be appearing on the screen with this person, but you were never in the same room. Like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, there's that that Netflix, the Zack Snyder zombie one, the one that has Batista in it. And
oh, yeah.
Tig Notaro is in that, and Tig Notaro was added in afterwards. Yeah.
Full replace?
They removed some
Chris D'Elia.
So Tig Notaro never acted with anyone. She filmed all her stuff during COVID and was just on a green screen trying to fit into this movie and added in digitally. Like, it just, what a weird experience. Like, the one that I had to laugh at was seeing Jack Black discuss the fact that when he goes to like a Chinese premiere for Kung Fu Panda,
yes,
it's like,
he's like, why am I here?
Why am I here? I'm not in the movie because someone else dubs it into Chinese, so.
And it's not my physical appearance
my
that
physical
you ever
appearance.
See.
Yeah, it's so, why am I here? Like, that was one of the funniest things where it's like, shit, yeah, why are you? Because you know, DreamWorks owns you now? Is that why you're there?
Oh, well, I think there was a second part where he's like, I mean, I'm never going to turn down a free trip, but I definitely don't understand. Oh, because it starts to be alluded to, I think it was like Pierce Morgan, where he's like, well, so, he's like, I get it. I know what you're going to ask, and I agree.
Yeah.
They can't see me. They don't hear my voice. I also don't know why I'm here, other than the free trip.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That's funny.
Speaking of free trips, how about winning? Ah, see what I did there? I was
nice, seamless. I like it. Yeah, how about winning a trip to Floss in Paradise? One of my favorite gimmicks that Luc Besson uses as a director is how he cuts multiple stories together simultaneously to tell one story. Like, one example is when Zorg first realizes that he doesn't have the stones, and it cuts back to Lilu just laughing about it because she's telling the story. And I think it's just absolute brilliant storytelling. The other one is like the Flossed in Paradise, the whole takeoff sequence where you've got Ruby Rod with the stewardess, but you also have like all the other stories going on. And of course the burning of the, of the boglins. Those are boglins being burned off. If you ever had a boglin when you were younger, I definitely had one. The boglins have come up on this show before, so I always have to shout out a boglin. But yeah, I do like his method of doing that.
Again, with the opera, when the main opera song is being sung,
that's another one. Yeah, the fight scene with the opera. That, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I also wonder, it's like when you see story elements, like how much of the director is put in there? Is like, do you feel like he didn't win very much as a kid? And so then he's like, obviously, like all these contests are rigged and they're just choosing who gets to go anyways. Or it's like, it's all a lie. You never hear about the person who actually won the trip.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, and I also got to wonder about whether the ground crew that's working there that are like passing the joint back and forth and while they're doing their job, whether this is some sort of commentary on the difference between the working class and the people that are on the ship itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are, well, this is who my who's got my life in their hands. It's these people are the ones that are responsible for changing the fuel,
who also just like the check and balance of just letting Ian home just into that ship in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He just climbs into the your classic climb into the landing gear and somehow be okay in this place that is definitely not pressurized.
Well, because they burned out the boglins,
so it's fine.
And somehow he ends up in the roof, though. Even though he comes in through the landing gear, he ends up in the wires in the roof when they do discover him once they land on Flossed Paradise.
Well, he's trying to get where he needed to go somehow.
Yeah. So I will say on this viewing, I definitely appreciate Chris Tucker a lot more, though, for what he is putting in. Like, nonstop for 5 minutes talking and entertaining, putting everything into it. And just the deadpan of Bruce Willis beside him, where it's, you know,
Thrilled. He's like, I'm working with what I got here, and what I got is not very much. Damn it, Bruce. I also wonder, like, how much is he in? Because I can't remember from this rewatch either. Like, how aware is he that Bruce, like, Dallas Corbin is there for a specific reason?
Yeah, I don't think
he is. Because it felt, the vibe I get from the competition is that it is someone that actually enjoyed Ruby. And won because of their fan, like, how much of a fan they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to, of course, Corbin Dallas. Yeah.
What he's getting, yeah. There's a lot of moments in this movie. It looks like Bruce Willis is like ready to break, right? Like, and especially with Chris Tucker. But there's even the moment in the very beginning when the guy mugs him, the guy with the hallway hat, when he snickers and says, "Nice hat," that it just seems so genuine from Bruce Willis. But, and there are a bunch of moments with Chris Tucker as well, though, where it looks like he's about to lose it.
The number of times he also has clearly been attempted robbery based on, this is my assumption, based on the number of guns that come down, of just like adding it to the pile and then putting them back into the ceiling.
Yeah.
That is also impressive.
I was going to say, I'm not a big fan of Chris Tucker in this movie. And I was trying to think, I found him annoying, but then I guess maybe that's the point.
Oh yeah.
I do remember thinking, I was surprised that he comes into the movie so late. Because he was he was one of my other memories of this movie, and I thought he was in it more, but...
No, he's just such a big presence that it feels like he's in a lot more of it.
Well, because you're introduced to the concept of the character really early on, but then from, like, the clip about the winning...
True, yeah.
But then you don't actually see him and interact with him until, much later in the film. And there's no redemptive arc for that character either. It's just he is what he is, who he is, and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even once they get to like the saving the day moment where he can't figure out to do what to do with his stone at all, you know, like,
Robin, that voice, I'm not saying,
Robin. Like he doesn't even care that his life was saved. He's like, I just did the best show I've ever done. Like, that's still like his main focus in like a giant ship, possibly full of people, still just blew up behind you. But it's like, yeah, this is the best show ever.
Got to get my clicks. Got to get my likes.
I think that the ending of this movie is bizarre to me. Like, I don't understand. Maybe I missed it. Like, I didn't pick up on something in the dialogue, but I didn't understand fully, I don't think, what Lilu's deal is.
Yeah.
Is she super powered. Like, she clearly seems like she's good at fighting. Maybe she has super strength.
Well,
but is she like Jesus? Like, is she like, I didn't understand, like, what's she so upset about at the end? Like, why is she lost? Like, why is she like, what is this whole thing about the love of humanity and all this stuff? Like, maybe I just completely like missed whatever the like moral through line of this story is supposed to be.
Yeah. She is like the divine being. She's perfect, right? She's like genetically perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The whole love thing is, it's like Harry Potter and his Patronus. How can she fight off the evil if she doesn't have a happy thought? And, yeah. You know, everything she's found out about war, it's just made her lose hope. And so that's what that whole bit is about. But yeah, as far as, does she have magic powers? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Like, maybe I'm probably like a dummy like movie watcher, but I felt like they needed to draw that out a little bit more, like her kind of like losing of faith.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. Because to me, it was like she was fine until all of a sudden she almost gets smoked by Zorg and then she's not fine. And I was like, but you didn't get shot. You seem fine. Just walk it off.
Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, part of it is also like if you expand everything out into the three movies, because I agree, it's like, okay, so the four elements, I guess if you like completely lost one of them, like would it just, you know, would, is the world not savable? Like, if you have absolutely no more water, there's no more wind, there's no more earth, or there's no more fire.
Yeah,
Okay, conceptually, if we just don't have one of those, blow it up.
You've got
okay.
a Voltron without a right leg. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and then it's like, the fifth element is like someone who gives a shit. Like, you have to convince this one person to just give enough of a shit to be able to save the world. And if they don't, I'm gonna blow you up. It's just, you're done. What if that was the crux of the third movie, of convincing her character to care enough to save the world?
Well, and any sci-fi / fantasy story, it needs this hero. It needs this, you know, this chosen one. I mean, how often have we heard chosen? Frodo was the chosen one. Anakin Skywalker was the chosen one. She's chosen.
I think you're spot on. I think if this is a trilogy, it's like, she needs, like, the movie number two where she can refuse the call and have to, and then Bruce Willis has to, like, actually work to bring her back.
Yeah. So ultimately, you think that this movie was done a disservice by being condensed into a single movie when he should have just stuck with his James Cameron Avatar vision from day one and said, no, this fucker's going to be five movies long.
This is the opposite problem that we had with The Hobbit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do think there was more story to tell, even with the bad guys. Like, they just never... Well, nobody in this movie ever really feels, like, settled in a role. Everybody's just... Things are just happening.
Mm-hmm. I'd been trying to think of it, and that statement really sent it home of, like, okay, so what if... What happens if Zorg wins? What happens differently in this movie if he wins?
I suppose nothing. The evil still takes over.
Shows up and blows up. Like, that was the goal. I mean, I guess it happens easier.
We were 2 seconds away from that happening anyway.
Yeah. Because if he had them, or they had them, as long as it showed up on time, which also, you know, I guess that's kind of, even going back to my main conceit, even as a child with my issues with the Power Rangers, as soon as they start forming together, I would be the monster to run up and kick the shit out of them, because I'm like, hey, quit doing that. That's how the last guy died. But my thought here was like, why is this thing sucking up satellites or doing anything? Just fly at the Earth. You would have won. Yeah. You waited around too long, but you could have done it. Also, the celestial issues of us just adding another moon to our orbit. I got a lot of follow-up questions on, because that's definitely what happened at the end. Yeah. Is at the exact same distance we added just another moon.
Yeah.
There's also like, I'm not a big fan of movies that like where the save is like turns on like a just like a random chance. Like, this guy sighs and all of a sudden they're like, we figured it out. Like, I don't know. I don't really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, with something that's important, you guys, that priesthood, you guys think you would have taken better notes.
That's true. Like, he does, that priest does spend an awful lot of time saying, theoretically, or so I've heard. Like,
okay, hold on, though. This one I will give credit back to. the guys who were in charge of this process did show back up in time and just happened to get blown up. Because we do have to remember the guy, the Mono Shawans or whoever they are, were about to come back and be like, oh, hey, guys, evil's on its... Oh, okay, we died. We all died. So here's a hand. Make the best of it.
Do what you can.
Yeah, this is all we have left for you is one of our not quite dead hands.
You know CPR, right? Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, quite in theory, dead, they were going to show up, prep things. Then their best laid plan was show up, prepare things in Egypt. The diva with the stones would show up. They'd use the fifth element. Everything's good. So they would have helped with the process, I think. Instead, they died a fiery death on a random planet.
Well, there we go. That's the fifth element. Now, Colin, Neil, on IMDb, it scored 7.6 out of 10, has a Metascore of 52. On Rotten Tomatoes, 71% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 86%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, pushing the little red button that you didn't ask Zorg about. Hit us with some reviews!
All right. Mariela Ortiz gives this movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, the first time I saw this, I thought it was terrible, apart from a few standout moments. The second time, I really enjoyed it. I think it's best appreciated as an over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek celebration of classic sci-fi, with a big helping of Besson's over-exuberance and just a little too much sexy time. Just a little. From the perspective of 2020, let's say, it would have never been made this way today. But what a ride! Gary Oldman is fantastic. And as in so many of his roles, almost entirely unrecognizable. The cast are great throughout. Chris Tucker's highly strung oversexed DJ compere MC or whatever his character is in those ultra femme clothes was too much to bear first time around, but then I got it. It's the future. Everything is either ridiculous or amazing and then very quickly ridiculous again, including the costumes, which follow the Barbarella template. It's all about sex from a leading designer. I'm going to have to give it another star. Really, it's great. And silly. And uncomfortably sexy. Just slightly.
I wonder if the 2020 part that they're talking, you know, like that aspect of it that doesn't hold up. I wonder if they're talking about the misogyny. Forcing a kiss on our heroine when she's passed out and stuff like that.
But for the mid-90s, the amount of ownership he takes of how bad his choice was, it's impressive.
That's true.
Because I did the right thing. I'm the guy. Also, but I had not thought of the amount of Bruce Willis that I see in this movie with his general lack of clothing and even the clothing he does have, the general lack of fabric on that clothing. Mm-hmm. I had not thought of
the weird the wardrobe. Backless. Yeah. The weird backless shirt. Yeah. That's a choice.
Mole says 5 out of 5, literally one of the best films ever made. Flawless, in my opinion. I really can't think of one part to criticize. The futuristic world is super realistic and really seems plausible, but the casting, the comedy, the story, and best of all, the characters are superb. This film is never overplayed on TV, and I think that's because even they realize it's a cult classic. The amount of thought and detail that went into every single aspect of this film is epic. Mila is so, so good. She's really compelling to watch, not only because she herself is flawless perfection, but her acting is phenomenal. She really is believable as a different being, and she portrays the emotion better than the majority of A-list actors. Bruce Willis is also great, and even though his character looks a bit like John McClane, he is so good you don't even see that. And Gary Oldman is always superb and so into his character. I love this film so much, and even being someone who can be critical of things, I love this film. Has no faults at all. 10 out of 10.
That one gave a lot more compliment to Milo Jovovich than we ever did in this movie. It can't be understated how great she was in this movie. I think that guy brings up a very solid point. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, we'll end with a 1 star from JD.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the director and everyone put their heads together and thought, how can we come up with the dumbest movie ever? Well, they certainly succeeded. From the large, clunky alien trash cans coming off a spaceship to the black guy wearing skin-tight onesies with a blonde dong on his head. This movie doesn't disappoint. It'll keep you on the edge of your seat guessing what stupid outfits and storylines will come next. They'll never forget the awfully dressed, rubber turtlenecked, southern sounding villain who's dead set on destruction. Totally recommend if you've watched every other Bruce Willis movie in existence and want a good laugh on just how much he made on this movie.
That's
Wow.
awesome.
Wow. Yeah. Right on. Oh, the fifth element. This is one that, I mean, on this viewing, watching it critically, one thing that really struck me was the music. I've never realized that, like, that whole car chase scene is scored by like some Indian song, and like just the music when they arrive on Lost in Paradise with this Hawaiian flair and the Divas song. And I was really struck by the music just because I was noticing it a lot more than I ever have. It's usually always just washed over me. I can't change my mind on this. No matter how many holes we poked in the plot and every, I've always had fun with this movie. And even watching it this time, yeah, some stuff doesn't make sense, but I still love this movie. I love this world. I think that's part of it, is I want to live more in this world. Just the idea of the apartment that he lives in, the idea of, you know, everything that we've mentioned throughout. I like the world, and I'm happy in this world. It Watching this movie again, I was still happy with it. I still like a Bruce Willis with hair movie, so that's my thought of it. I'm still a 70, 80% guy myself on this one. So I'll throw it over to you, Neil, because I want to save the first time viewer for last. So on this viewing, what any new takeaways? What did you think of Fifth Element?
No, I think it's still like it's, there are elements that are a product of its time. That's not changing. You can't change that. If anything, you just change how you look at them based on things that happen afterwards. But that doesn't change people giving their heart and soul in the acting department, the practical effects being really good. Like you said, a truly developed world that leaves so many more questions than answers. Because again, at the end of the day, I just have so many questions just about
I want to know about the
Earth alone.
garbage. The you know, she apologizes for the garbage in the airport. I want to know the, I guess they built creatures for that scene, and that scene that were on strike, and they were never used, but I want to know that story. Yeah, I want that. I want the trilogy, I think.
What's your Jetsons thing? What's the deal with the fog and everything just getting taller? Like how prevalent is McDonald's? How like So I agree, especially when you start from 1914 as being the crux, and even that is hearkening to something that is 5,000 years old. So it's like you said, it's like it's not just the world Earth, it's the world surrounding, because that means these aliens have felt like this is a thing that they need to deal with for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So there's so many, and I guess that's part of it. It's like, I love the questions that we have. So I'm right there with you. I'd say it's absolutely worth a watch. It is John McClane in space. Let's not get it twisted. And I think if you have not seen it, you should absolutely watch it. So I'm right there with you with that, like 4 out of 5.
Right on. Colin, here we go. Destroy this movie I love. What did you think of the Fifth Element on the, you know, checking it out here for the first time? Or, well, I'll say for the first time, because like you said, it's just kind of flashes that you remember this movie from before.
Yeah. I don't know. This movie was tough in a way for me with this podcast that I don't think I've experienced since we watched Buckaroo Banzai,
Oh, wow.
where I found it like it's not as bad as that, but I found it like so hard to just sit and watch and pay attention. It just didn't suck me in the way that I like had hoped it would, the way that I remembered from like watching it as when I was
Yeah,
younger.
okay.
And it just like I think what I said like towards the end of our general discussion, but it was just like I just found like it was so all over the place. Like it was just it's like it started and things were like kind of linear, and then Lilu shows up, and then from that time it's just kind of like a mess. Thing it's just things
ADHD.
that things yeah just like let's go here, let's go like and what's that? And then it's just like things just happening until I guess like they the point where they get on the ship, and then it's like we move to the end. But everything in between those two points, I just like could not keep up. I could not keep track, and I felt like I kept like losing the story. There are still things that I like about it. Like I do like Mila Jovovich for the most part. I think I think she does a really good job. I think that Gary Oldman, when he's on screen, he's probably the one who it's hard to like take your eyes off him. Weirdly, I found Bruce Willis to be kind of unremarkable in this movie. Like I just didn't I really even notice him all that much in this movie. So I don't know. I would probably be in the middle. I'd probably be more of like, if we're doing star ratings, I'd be in like the 3 out of 5. I don't think it's bad. And I would also like caveat that with like, maybe I just need to give, I need like, maybe I'm also too ADD and I just need to like sit down and just like really watch it.
You
This is
need.
a movie where actually right now I would like to go and watch in a theater where I still have, like, it's a hard movie for me to watch in my house. Is kind of how I felt. It's like I need the theater atmosphere where I'm just like, I know that's what I'm there for, and I can just like eat my popcorn and watch a movie.
I will, I don't always have the opportunity to say these things because I'm not always on a podcast that would hearken to it. I am a huge, huge proponent of the circumstances in when you're watching a movie really dictating how much that movie will speak to you. Because you can still go to the theater, but you just showed up late and now you got to sit in the second or front row. It could end up being one of the greatest movies of all time, but you just hated from start to finish. Or like you forgot to go to the bathroom. So for half the movie, all you're thinking about is, man, I really got to piss right now, but I don't want to leave the movie theater. So like I think there's a lot to be said, exactly like you're mentioning, a lot to be said about your actual movie going experience. Telling your body how much, because I always think of like, oh, that comedian was so funny. Yeah, you bought tickets to a comedy show, you planned to go to a comedy show, and then you went to a comedy show. The fourth one, they need to be pretty bad if you don't start laughing when they start telling you jokes. Like the bar at which has to get low enough for you not to have a good time at something like you said you're mentally and physically preparing for.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you opened this whole thing with saying that you're already going through a bit of a personal crisis, not knowing how you feel about sci-fi. So that right there, kind of, going into it, I don't think that puts the best spin on your experience either. So. Do I like sci-fi? Hey, let's sit down and watch this sci-fi movie.
So you gotta test yourself.
You gotta keep rolling. You gotta keep finding out.
That's right.
The verdict is starting to lean towards no, though, I'm sad to say.
Well, not when you cite like Buckaroo Banzai as the next closest sci-fi movie. Well, there we go. That's Fifth Element, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a huge thank you to our special guest, Neil Powell. Neil, I know that Farm to Fable isn't the only thing that's on your resume, so I mean, take this time, plug your shit.
Definitely. If you enjoy watching things and have watched the entirety of Young Justice, which is a truly, truly well-written show that is it is written in a way that it is merely a window into a world that would exist with or without us. I know, actually know the producer personally, and that is definitely how he frames his view on it. It is a world that continues, and you just get an opportunity to look in on the characters on occasion with the show and the comics and stuff like that. So I do a full breakdown. We're currently in the fourth season of that, and it's called Whelmed: Young Justice Files. So
I
I
love
produce,
it.
edit. So I produce, edit, and host on that one now. So it is, there's a lot of me. So if you don't like it, it's like you're saying you don't like me personally. Oh, I just
Well, that's because you're a predator. We
We talked about that before you showed up, Colin. Did you know that the industry standard term for someone who produces and edits a podcast is a predator?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
There's actually like job listings out there for a professional predator. Yep.
I refused to believe it until I got to a point where it was something for Hulu/Disney, and that was what they were still calling it. I was like, well, this is it. Can't get away from it. I'm never going to say it that that's what I do, but apparently
Well,
that is the industry term.
I am stoked to check out your podcast because I love Young Justice. I haven't watched season 3 or 4 yet because I don't know how to get them without buy like I don't want to steal them.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm trying to like and I didn't have like HBO Max when they first came out. And I don't think I think maybe season 3 is on Blu-ray, but it's super expensive right now. But I think that Young Justice season 2 is one of the like the greatest animated series I've ever seen in my life. It was so good. But
yeah, it is. It is definitely.
And Whelmed is like,
yeah,
greatest in joke of all TV animation.
If Freeze is underwhelmed and so-and-so is overwhelmed, can you just be whelmed? Yeah, so pulled that. But of course, if you like Dungeons & Dragons and want tips and tricks on how to run games, you can head over to Dungeon Master's Block. We're coming up on 10 years and 300 main episodes. Wow. So there's a lot of content there, but always trying to make more, figure out what genuinely just what people want to talk about. Once you've gone long enough, that's just the question you ask your guest is like, what do you want to talk about? And then to make the episode happen, you just say, hey, why did you want to talk about that? And then you just go from there. So yeah, if you enjoy that, with the new edition coming out, I assume we'll probably get an influx of new listeners, and we'll try and help them along and be our tagline is to just keep on dungeon mastering.
Oh, that's sweet. I actually am in need of your podcast. Then I just played my first ever Dungeons and Dragons campaign. It ended like a week or 2 weeks ago, and it was
nice,
the coolest experience of my life. And the guy who was our dungeon master was like, I was blown away. It was amazing. But
it can be so good, and it could also be the harrowing worst experience of some people's lives. Not every table is for every person is a thing we often say on the podcast.
I'm wondering whether you need to sit down and play this one.
Action 12 Cinema.
Mr. Ross's book.
Yep.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Neil.
Of course.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast. It means more coming from a person to say, hey, there's this show I like. But it also means a lot in reviews and star ratings. So go over to whatever podcast app you listen to and give us some stars. Give us 5 of them. A little stars and reviews just helps get us noticed, helps make us show up on algorithms. Or if you want to go above and beyond and be our goddamn hero, well, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become a producer of our show, and then you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum at the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin. Sci-fi month. Okay, well, this one wasn't a good one for you, but you've already name-dropped our next pick. So
The Matrix?
The Matrix. Yeah, next week we have another Farm to Fable co-host returning. Yeah, Chris Goffredo is coming on our show to talk The Matrix.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So you said that you've seen this somewhat recently? When
yeah, I watched, I'm gonna say I watched it during the pandemic. I think it's kind of fun. In the pandemic, I was like, oh, I'm gonna go through all these franchises or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure when it came to The Matrix, it was because I wanted to watch the new one.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which I then heard was dog shit, but I'm pretty sure I started at watching The Matrix and then just ended there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, there we go. So until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you for The Matrix on I Used to Like This One. Oh, yeah. There we go.
Woo!
In the can.